Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 16th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Rick Arpin, the managing director of KPMG Las Vegas, on the report recently issued by the company surrounding the convergence of sports, media, and gaming. This week's program is thanks in part to Konami Gaming. Stay tuned for later in the show. We'll be touching on the core slots they brought to G2E earlier this month.
Turns out to be a footnote. I'm a man with a mission in 2 or 3 editions, and I'm giving you a long look every day.
The legalization of sports betting in 2018 has brought many different players in contact with the gaming industry as each tries to put themselves in the best position. But what strategy should they use? KPMG Las Vegas leader Rick Arpin has put together a blueprint for any company wishing to enter this explosive market with the report capitalizing on the convergence of sports, media, and gaming. The report talks about the importance of partnerships, technology, and understanding the regulations, offering suggestions on how to make the enterprise profitable and transparent right from the start. He spoke with me from his offices in Las Vegas in September.
Every day I write the book.
Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Our guest today is Rick Arpin from KPMG, the Las Vegas office. Rick, thanks for joining us. It's great to see you again.
Roger, thanks for having me. Always great to see you.
Doing some great work. I mean, we talked during the pandemic right when it started. And you had some concerns, but you also had you saw some light at the end of the tunnel there. And then we took a long time to go through the tunnel, but we seem to have come out on the other end. How do you think the industry has responded so far?
Yeah, I think, obviously on one end, it's been a great run of revenues and profits as we've sort of ramped out of the pandemic.
Sure.
There's certainly a question, I suppose, about which parts of those are sustainable. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, like a lot of things in the economy, it needs some more time to shake out and see where things land. But I think the gaming companies are in a great position just generally. And then we've seen, I don't know that anyone could have predicted the rapid pace of online gaming activity. I mean, we all sort of had predictions around which states and how fast and that sort of thing. And that part, you know, couldn't have been too far off because there's only 50 states. But the level of activity and the sort of embracing of sports betting and online gaming as a catalyst has been quite interesting to see. And I think is really, really important in the context of even the questions that might remain around COVID and its impact on land-based and labor shortages, or how long does that take to shake out, or inflation, and all these various, it's not an easy time to be running a company in any industry, and ours is no different. We still have a lot of things to be thinking about, and things change daily, but the ability to leverage a whole new business model and at least to date not be run over by it, but actually participate with it, maybe unlike retailers,
mm-hmm.
to embrace digital has been really interesting to see, and I think is the thing I'm probably most hopeful about, because it really is a difference maker.
Yeah, no question about it. And, you know, I think another positive is that, you know, we certainly haven't come back with all the non-gaming revenue yet. Certainly the meetings and convention space and entertainment is really just starting to ramp up now. So, you know, there's all that possibility, you know, added on to the profitability we've seen so far. So, you know, I'm hoping that will continue to this upward slide on revenue, and it will maintain.
Yeah, I think the where gaming is positioned today, whether because of the great work companies have done on the land-based side or because of the digital expansion, it's got a more prominent place in almost in society. And I think we saw that recently with the sort of annual AGA survey
and
you know, other things we've seen about the embracing of sports betting. That allows those other elements to really shine through. I mean, we've seen that in Las Vegas. We've seen that coming and sort of got delayed a little bit on the Raiders side, but we've seen it with, you know, other sports and the entertainment aspects of Las Vegas for a long time, that when given its sort of proper place, you can really leverage these assets together. And I think that's only going to continue as we see things like sports books in and around stadiums and all those other sorts of points of connection into, I'll call it, everyday society. It just means gaming has a bigger place,
right? Absolutely,
which is a, you know, things that the industry can leverage for its benefit.
Yeah, no question. Well, yeah, I do want to talk about this report you guys put out recently, capitalizing on the convergence of sports media and gaming. You know, you've outlined how many deals there were, you know, I guess since 2018, and it seems like it averaged about 17 or 18, you know, every year. But you know, we're only halfway through 21. You guys had counted at least 17 deals already. You know, so why has that ramped up so quickly?
Yeah, it's been fascinating to watch, right? We all get to, I feel like some folks maybe for 4 years woke up and looked at Twitter to see what our president was saying on Twitter. Right. Now we wake up on Twitter to see what deals are being announced in the gaming space, right?
Exactly.
It's just been this, sort of perfect storm, I suppose, of things happening faster than we might have thought have caused people to react quickly. They realize that they need to be in this game, and that there's ways they can play in this space that are beneficial, but they don't have the time to sort of build it on their own.
Sure.
And so deal making has just become the way to get things done in the speed that's required for the current moment. I think our view certainly is that that's going to continue. I think most bankers and analysts think that's going to continue for a variety of reasons, which we can get into. But that also is what will be interesting to me also is after that phase, however long that is, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years of continued sort of M&A and other deal activity, is there a period of organic growth or product innovation and those sorts of things that takes over, you know, after that? That's maybe still yet to be determined. Right now we're in sort of clearly in just a deal mode in this industry.
Sure. Some of these have been pretty big deals. I mean, we're measuring them in billions of dollars. I mean, the Entain deal that's out there right now, they're talking about a $22 billion purchase price for that. That's a lot of money. Why is it...
Well, let's see. I guess it depends on the lens you come from. I mean, I suppose if you're in part of the industry, you clearly are focused on the TAM, the total addressable market, and saying that's a justification for these deals. I think that, to me, you got to look at the strategic and the financial. The strategic is the belief that early mover advantage is going to matter, that Amazon, for example, is what it is because it started early, you know, to make just sort of an obvious, easy analogy. So people want to be in early. And then when you combine that with financial and capital markets, that's still, you know, basically money's very cheap and there's lots of money to be invested in the private equity, hedge fund, other, you know, VC worlds. It's just, again, call it the perfect storm. Combine that with the fact that there is a total addressable market. Now you can debate what it's going to be and how fast and those sorts of things. People are willing to take some chances, I'd say, and try to think ahead and be where the puck is going, so to speak. And so that means you might assign a $1 billion value to a company that others might have assigned only a few hundred million to 6 months ago.
Or
I guess we could use your example, right? I guess 6 months ago someone thought Entain was worth 11 or so billion,
right?
And today someone thinks it's worth, you know, upwards of 20 to 22 billion.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Why have the DFS companies become so dominant in the sports betting field? I mean, they took off right away, and they're still kind of running away from the pack.
Yeah, I mean, it's a customer acquisition game, right?
Right.
And they had, I suppose, from some perspectives, a leg up on that with the daily fantasy market. And again, folks can debate, you know, sort of how that came about and. Was it all, you know, did it go the right way, or would I believe have done it better, et cetera? But that's really what it is. Now, you know, Europe grew up differently, I suppose. You had more of the affiliate marketing sort of notions and that sort of thing. We're seeing some of that, you know, certainly in the U.S., but we're seeing other forms of customer acquisition, you know, whether that's partnership deals, et cetera. But ultimately, really, this is going to be about getting the most people into your ecosystem, and then obviously, there's also another notion in the online digital space that can't be ignored, which is customer retention, which we're in the early innings, I suppose, of our digitization as an industry. Right. And so the focus is more on customer acquisition today. It'll morph over time, I presume, to customer retention. And that's what I sort of meant even about the innovation on the product side. If today it's a rush to get scale and market share, is it tomorrow a rush to make sure you have the best products that people want to be associated with forever? I mean, Amazon, again, I use a simple analogy, and Amazon was first and early, but if Amazon didn't have the best sort of mousetrap, mm-hmm. Would we still be buying everything on Amazon?
Right.
I mean, I still buy on Amazon just because it is so darn easy to buy. It literally takes me 30 seconds to buy something on Amazon that I just know I can go there and get it. That's not an acquisition story anymore. They've had my data for for many
right,
years.
Yeah.
Right.
But at the same time, some of the early movers in the internet gaming side, whatever happened to MySpace? You know, I mean, they were the dominant one before Facebook, and they disappeared. You know, I mean, so that doesn't mean, even though the DFS companies are dominant now, that's sustainable. I mean, somebody's going to come in, like you say, with a better mousetrap.
Very astute observation. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I think it's one of the challenges, I think, in this space that I see between the pace of things and the access to capital and the variety of the fact that we're banking on a future addressable market and that there are multiple ways to access capital like SPACs. I think there's a risk personally, and I think others might validate this, to the individual investors here, a little bit akin to sort of the internet bubble of 20 years ago, where, if you're a portfolio type investor or a hedge fund or PE shop, and you don't necessarily care which one wins, you're sort of spread your bets and hedged your bets. Mm-hmm. But if you're an individual investor and you can only buy 5 shares of stock and you think it's one of the companies, whether
right.
it's DraftKings
sure.
or MGM or Entain or Caesars or anyone, and it turns out it's not them for whatever reason,
right.
and that can take a lot of different turns. And
sure.
you're right, we may not know who the ultimate winner is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a risk because you're still spending the same, you're still buying at the same, call it elevated share price.
Sure, right. Well, there's your report outlines that there's so many different aspects to this market. You know, on the media side, you have the media, like the networks, TV networks. You have the social media companies that probably started out as blogs. You've got the professional sports teams, the colleges, and the list goes on. How difficult is it to navigate this community, and what do they all get out of it,
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I think someone I was speaking to actually earlier today mentioned, we got to think, we always should think about principles-based things here when we get distracted by lots of things happening. What are the principles? And one of the principles they outline, which I hadn't really focused on lately, is that content is always king. And I
right.
should have remembered that, because when I was at MGM, my last job there was running our entertainment and sports
right.
group. And certainly, that's who holds the chips, so to speak,
sure.
in when you're negotiating for anything with those people,
right.
they are the content. And
mm-hmm.
so ultimately, what they want, they often get. And so here it's teams, right? It's
right.
leagues, content owners. And so I think they've done to date, a pretty good job of sort of leveraging their position. They, we probably, most of us in the industry thought they started off a little rough trying to get integrity fees and that sort of thing.
Right.
But I think they turned quickly to saying, look, we have an asset. That asset should have value. How do we maximize the value of that asset? And I think, that's important in this sort of ecosystem. This is an ecosystem that needs an engine. So one of the engines is states regulating,
right.
adding
sure.
betting, and that's starting sort of the flywheel effect. But also, are the content owners willing to sort of put their content out there in a way that can be monetized? And so they've been doing that. And I think, long term, at least in sports betting, I think that probably the ultimate end goal is still, I think, in play type betting,
mm-hmm.
that you can get real scale and
sure.
volume.
Right.
But you have to start that process. And it seems like those folks control a little bit here of the pace of activity, and so for the others in that ecosystem, I would say that the partnership teams and those sorts of folks, you know, have never been more valuable and are probably never worth, you know, worth more than they are today.
Right.
If you're in the ecosystem, you need to make sure you know what everyone's doing and have a and have the first leg in on having these discussions with the content owners, right?
Sure,
and,
sure.
And the other piece and the other people in the ecosystem.
Yeah. And again, there's a lot of other elements of the ecosystem as well, you know, and so you have to partner with all these different companies, certainly the content owners, how do you determine the shape of a deal, you know, with if you're doing a deal, say, with the NFL or the NHL or the individual teams, or even colleges are getting into it now?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, one, it's super challenging. These are new sort of ventures we're getting mm-hmm. into, and they're difficult to value for that reason. And again, when there's sort of a bit of a gold rush to things, you certainly can have, mismatches, hey, yeah. I overpaid for this, I underpaid for that, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. I think some of it's just going to take time to shake out. I know, for example, folks struggle with that on the B2B side, right? What is official data worth?
Right.
What is my payments pipeline worth to you?
Mm-hmm. Sure, right.
We sort of think we know that in a traditional credit card retail setting. Gets more challenging as we move into like online payments through a wallet.
Sure.
It's tied to a loyalty card at a casino, right?
And right.
So these are all things I think that are going to take a little bit of time to work out. And what I would say is, hopefully, if I'm a player in the ecosystem and I have a great partnership team, I want to have as good of an analytics and a finance team to try to get, you're not going to get the right answer, but if you can narrow your margin on how far off you are compared to others in the long run, you'll make a few more better deals than the others. And look, all that's coming back to is again, from a principal's perspective, is how long does it take one of these companies to sort of break through from a, call it a profit perspective,
you know,
what is the true, and I know there's a lot of folks that publish numbers and whatnot, and I'm not sure how you really know exactly what your customer acquisition cost is, but again, directionally, those who can bring that number down faster and then raise the retention percentage are going to win the battle, and you can do that, that's more than likely, at least for now, not going to be some home run, earth-shattering, oh my gosh, look, they just made this thing that is going to change the world. It's going to be 5% better negotiation on every deal you
sure,
make between
right.
now and 5 years from now, and suddenly you're the last—not the last guy standing, but you're in the pole position because you did the little things along the way that made the most sense.
Yeah, no question.
This year marked the G2E debut for Konami's newest for-sale core cabinets, Dimension 49 and Dimension 27. Ranked as the industry's top portrait machine for four straight months, Dimension 49 showed a brand extension on the Treasure Ball Jackpot series. Dimension 27 has more than 50 available games for the stack screen format, including Panda Power, with different bonus events for all three screens. Both core machines are available now with special pricing options. Call your Konami rep to take advantage. Now back to our podcast.
In the gaming industry, we're used to the strict regulatory environment. We know we have to deal with responsible gaming issues and things like that. Are these non-gaming companies who are involved in the sports betting atmosphere, are they understanding these difficulties, the risks that they come along with also?
Yeah, I think my impression so far is they have a decent sense of it. I mean, I think it is something that I think we need to keep emphasizing to all of us, ourselves,
sure, right.
if you will, right? Everyone in the ecosystem needs to really pay attention to this. And I think to date, I think we've done a pretty good job of trying to make that point. I think the AGA is doing a pretty nice job of that. You see sports teams coming alongside that, right? You see media companies coming alongside that. I think we are at least at this point talking the talk.
Right.
In a lot of ways, I think the real question here that we have to answer for ourselves is, will we walk the walk, and how strongly will we walk that walk for the long term? I do think we obviously can do that. This industry has a lot of people with great integrity and super smart, and we can figure this stuff out. having said that, I would guess the European gaming industry thought the same thing, and look at the struggles they're having.
Sure,
right?
Right, yeah.
And in our market, you know, the risk, I think, is that when you're in an environment like we've described where, you know, there's lots of stuff happening, companies are more public than private, if you will, the TAM estimates are really important, you know, you put all these factors in place, do we run the risk that no matter what we intend to do, we suffer from, you know, just the age-old, hey, I got to get my quarterly earnings, I got to get my market share up, and you know what, I'll deal with responsible gaming next quarter, next year,
right,
later, etc. Right, we've got to make sure we are on point at every sort of step of the way, and I think that's just incumbent upon all of us. I include, you know, myself, my firm, all of our firms, everyone in the ecosystem really has to come together here and think that way. And
right.
I think I've heard and seen quite a bit of good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're just going to have to keep that momentum, because the pressures aren't going to go away, and the need for it are not going to go away. They're only going to grow as we actually get to that total
sure,
addressable
right.
market number, right?
Right. Well, you know, that number is a pretty big number. You know, the estimates of the sports betting revenue pie are pretty big. But you know, even as big as they are, not everyone is going to succeed. How are we going to measure the success of each enterprise? I mean, is it just going to be the bottom line, or is it going to be, you know, the size of their audience, or what's going to be the measure of success here?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think it depends on which part of the ecosystem you're in. I think it's also one of the things driving what I would sort of call vertical integration or deals across throughout the ecosystem,
mm-hmm.
right? It's clearly going to be harder in the near term for a sort of a pure online consumer-facing gaming company to be profitable.
Right.
We see that in pure plays like a DraftKings. You know, they're not hiding the fact that they're losing money, right?
Right.
They're publicly, they're very upfront about that. They explain why that's okay in their minds, and
right.
where they're headed, right? But you know, the B2B companies, right, a lot of them are profitable and have a good chance to really continue that
sure.
that growth. And so then, what do you see? You see consumer facing companies maybe partnering or merging with the B2Bs,
right?
And then you sort of hedge your bets, and you get maybe a technology stack you need and other strategic reasons. I think the media companies are a great example, right? Media companies, I mean, they don't have the greatest track record just over time of
mm-hmm.
being profitable entities. I mean, they have had their share of challenges, and we've seen lots of things like, you know, how many times have Vivendi and Universal been merged and unmerged and this and that.
Right.
This stuff, you know, that industry is notorious for these issues, but those companies joining up with an online gaming company, where you say, well, sports betting doesn't make any money today, but it's fueling viewership, which is generating advertising profits. Well, great, put those together, because
mm-hmm.
if one's fueling the other, you know, why add friction to the system? Put it all together, and let's just be one happy family and enjoy then sort of a normalized profit between the two pieces, right?
Sure.
So if you can't figure out who should, as you were asking earlier, how do you figure out how to make a deal? If you can't figure out the exact economics, just take away the need to figure out both sides, because you are both sides.
Yeah.
That's a legitimate sort of strategy, right? To not have to worry about the profitability aspect, because you don't have to worry about how much you're paying for the rights if you own the rights.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, technology is obviously the key here, and you know, we've got these big companies like Kambi and BetConstruct, and you know, the B2B companies that are making some good inroads there. But then you've got companies like Bally's and Penn that want to own their own technology. You know, what do you think is the best strategy here?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. I think it really does depend on the company. I think. One thing that I think is important for us to think about is not just what's happening today, but what's likely to happen in the future. And I think one thing that's very interesting to me is that while we're seeing a wave of M&A and including, again, you can call it vertical integration, there's some of it's horizontal, or you can just look at it as a 360
right.
ecosystem integration. You know, a lot of that is again being driven by the sort of demands of the market and the call it the stock market or Wall Street
mm-hmm.
or investors, because that's what I think value is. But how many times have we seen in other industries where, you know, in hotels, we've always had this notion that you're better off operating or owning, not both, because then you can and maximize value. Operators get a better multiple, owners get a better multiple. Right. We've seen gaming companies do that. But, you know, those trends sometimes change. And my belief is that over the coming, you know, X number of years, could be a long-term play, that we may see waves of aggregation and disaggregation where companies today want to own pieces of the ecosystem. In your case, with your example, hey, I want to own the tech stack, and then may in the future, you know, suffer from, you know, oh, you know, the pure play over there is getting a better value than me. I think I need to split these two, you know, companies apart and go sell this technology to others because that's where I can really make money. Mm-hmm. I just don't know that there's a right answer. I think that you, at the end, at some point though, the technology will win out. And so that means the easiest app to use, right? And the best technology that can drive in-play betting, for example, and the best features. I mean, you look at companies like, you know, Evolution and what their product, and so productized, you know, offerings, right? Inspired with their virtual stuff. You know, you can pick 10 different examples, right? That's where the world's going to head. We're just not focused on that today because it's easier to, again, think of sexy mergers and acquisitions.
Right.
From the outsider's view, the insiders, I think, have a very tough decision because I do think that those trends could change. So while it might be the absolute right decision for a DraftKings to buy SB Tech or a Penn to want to control its technology, in 5 years that may be different. And you know, all you can do is set yourself up the best you can to react to those things.
Sure, absolutely. So, where do lotteries fit into this equation?
Well, I mean, especially on the digital side, I think there's a ton of opportunity in that space. You know, lotteries are a very well recognized. I'd call it a hobby. I mean, you know, people enjoy them, right? And so the ability, I think for lottery, it's no different than sort of thinking about a land-based company being able to digitize their product.
Right.
And being able to engage with their customers in a 360 way.
Right.
It's a huge opportunity for the lottery companies. And I don't, you know, I don't know where, I'm not a lottery expert. And I don't know where folks who study lotteries would say we are in the span of life cycle or evolution of a potential innovation in lottery.
Right.
But I can't imagine we're more than halfway.
Yeah.
I mean, there's got to be a ton of potential in lotteries leveraging digital, you know, distribution and then all the products that can go with that digital distribution. No different than, you know, I think in online gaming, for example, I don't think anyone would debate that we're very early stages of where the product could go.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, you know, mentioning online gaming, I think the acceptance of sports betting is really going to drive the acceptance of online gaming. We've already seen it in the states that have it, in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, you know, and Michigan did sports betting and online gaming at the same time. And yeah, I think once the states realize they can make a lot more tax money, you know, via online gaming, I think there's going to be pretty much a gold rush to online gaming. How does that fit in? And I think that's mostly on the casino side. You're not going to see the media and the sports teams get into that as much as the casinos will.
Yeah, I would think, I mean, directionally, I would agree with everything you just said. I think it will be interesting to see if someone surprises us with the notion that you just mentioned about like the media companies.
Right, sure.
Right. Is there a play for them? And I think what I'll say is maybe it's not them directly or the people or the companies we're thinking of when you and I just said that.
Right.
But I do think we've been tracking another sort of convergence pattern. And, you know, maybe we'll throw a paper together on this at some point, but that's really on the video gaming side,
right?
We've seen it. It's already been happening. We have gaming companies that either have or still own social gaming companies, right? And there are social casino companies that are not part of our industry, sort of on the free-to-play, if you will. But there's a whole host of activities and companies, you know, thinking about hey, I've got this video game product, how do I monetize? I mean, esports is essentially that,
right?
Got this product, how do I monetize it? And there's a betting crossover. So there's lots of overlapping circles, I suppose, is my point. And I think there's certainly opportunity for those sorts of industries to converge as well. And maybe that's a way for those companies to play in the iGaming space that maybe such a traditional media company.
Sure.
So maybe it's more the gaming, video gaming companies on that end.
Okay, great. So this is a really thoughtful report, I think. How can people access it and check it out?
Yeah, it's it's available on our website, and I think the easiest, I think you can just Google KPMG US convergence and it'll pop right up.
Okay.
It's certainly also folks can reach out to me directly. I'm just rarpin@kpmg.com, and I'm happy to send a copy. But we try to keep our thought leadership, I'd say, pretty simple. There's a lot of work that goes into these things, and we try not to, put it all down on paper so it's a 100-page read.
Yeah.
Keep it simple and clean, and really try to be insightful. I mean, our focus is on, what do we have to do about this stuff? And you brought up regulatory risk and responsible gaming, right? And we think of things like cyber, cybersecurity, obviously an issue, but really becomes more of an issue when you've got all these things coming together, right? Because what happens, or what can happen, is when these types of deals and partnerships and other things are forming, and again, it's easy to focus on the financial or maybe the strategic, but at the end of the day, it becomes operational, and you don't want an issue to happen, and then company A saying, well, that's company B's fault.
Right.
Company
yeah.
B saying, no, it says right there in the agreement, you're responsible for that.
Right.
Well, we didn't focus on that. We just wanted to get the roadshow done.
Right.
These are things that are really, really important, and they have to be focused on, and they get more complex when there's more people involved.
Sure. And then down the road, you're going to have to deal with cyber currency at some point, so how's that going to work?
I don't even
want to go there. But.
There's another whole paper on blockchain and crypto, right?
Okay, yeah, great. So I think KPMG is doing such an incredible job, in the gaming space. I know your company covers all kinds of industries, but you've got some real talented people. I met Russell Mifsud from Malta when I was in London last year, and what a sharp young man he is, congratulations on this report, and keep up the good work for the industry, because I think it's really important what KPMG is doing.
Well, thank you, Roger. We do think of it that way. We want to be a partner with the industry and all its participants, and that includes you, so we love partnering with you on things. Thanks for having me, and I know we'll get to see each other in person, hopefully at G2E coming up soon.
So let's catch up again in a few months after things have cleared up with the recovery from the pandemic, and see where we are.
Awesome.
Great.
Day,
thanks for the time.
Every day I write the book.
Hope you enjoyed this week's GGB podcast, with thanks again to Konami Gaming. Contact your Konami rep to bring their very latest core slots to your casino. To learn more about what companies entering the sports market and iGaming markets need to consider, visit ggbmagazine.com. For all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the recovery from the pandemic, delivered to your desktop every Monday morning, sign up for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or Spotify today. And we'll see you next week on the GGB podcast.